Item number one is from the Director of the Intergovernmental Relations and the Interim Assistant Fiscal and Budget Administrator, and an informational report on the impact of the state budget. This is also going to be considered by the Finance and Audit tomorrow, and it is informational. Some of these reports were heard by the separate committees. Family care was heard this morning in Health and Human Needs, along with DHHS and Aging, and the Transit Committee also heard their report.
Right, and I think we talked about this last meeting, getting reports and we've seen the budget, we have the budget hearings, et cetera. So I'm going to ask Ms. De La Rosa and Ms. Babish to make sure we, I think you have all those reports too, but we want to make sure, and I'll ask the reporters and the information we got along with you to make sure we got all this information. And we want to make sure we send it to our delegation. I mean, it's very important that they get all this information, and so it's to send it to our representative. So I presume that would be coming in with Mr. De La Rosa and Ms. Bablich, right? So let's make sure that's done, and so we can coordinate all this. And I know we got to say it's not just for ourselves, obviously. And we were testifying, three of us, with support from many of our fellow supervisors the other day at the Joint Finance. Many people in your areas also commented on many of these issues that will be summarized, and I ask you to kind of to summarize today. And when, I think Mr. De La Rosa will give his report, Ms. Babich, and thank you for all your work you did for Joint Finance, and bless you, and getting all this information ready that we had a chance to talk about on the Joint Finance. It was well coordinated, so we appreciate all your work. And, I mean, they're here to help us, and we'll fight for all these things. And then you can throw it off to Ms. Paul, so you can introduce yourself again when you throw it to her for the administration report. Then. Okay? Committee, we're ready to go then?
You can
comments?
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, I'll have something else. Good.
Sure. That'd be just fine.
Okay.
So De La Rosa, floor is yours, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. We'd like to really thank members of the committee for testifying on Monday at Monday's Joint Finance Committee at State Fair Park, opening with Chairman Holloway's testimony, which was provided to the committee, as well as presentations from yourself, Mr. Chairman, committee member Supervisor Dimitrievich, Supervisor Jurczyk, and Supervisor Peggy West, who made presentations, health and social programs, transit, child care, child support enforcement, the whole gamut of his
juvenile corrections
that you made the presentation on. It was very informative. Thank you for taking time to do that. Basically, what we have before you today is a report that was done in conjunction with the Department of Administrative Services, Fiscal Unit, as well as county departments, and is an attempt to give an analysis of the governor's budget onto Milwaukee County. You have the report before you. Particularly want to call your attention to attachment number A. But before we do that, I'd just like to briefly say that this report is basically a follow-up to the report that had been submitted last month. However, there's a little more details that have been provided as to the tools which are contained in the budget repair bill, so that when it is enacted, some more information has been attained. Although as it relates to Milwaukee County, the so-called savings that are being purported in the bill are relatively small, given the magnitude of the budget cuts that we are facing in Milwaukee County, as well as the fact that we've already budgeted some of those savings. With that said, we also have with us today, and we'll conclude with the major impacted departments, namely transit, family care, child support, enforcement, and DHSS, who will be able to provide more details and respond to any specific questions that you may have. But first of all, a little background on the governor's budget. As it relates to Milwaukee County, for purposes of 2011, the current year, reductions in state funding are approximately $2.7 million. They take place primarily in three areas, youth aids, circuit support grants, and the mental health, alcohol, and substance abuse area. That's for purposes of this year. There are much more serious reductions, as you can tell, in Attachment 1 that take place in 2012. They cut across basically all county departments and all program service areas. The reductions are anticipated to take place in state funding is approximately $25.7 million. They cover everything from shared revenue, transit operating assistance, general transportation aids, youth aids, community aids, circuit court support grants, child support, mental health and alcohol, substance abuse, and TAD and M grants. Plus, it's important to emphasize one of the big unknowns that is laying out there and must be addressed is the area medical assistance, or MA. This is approximately a $500 million item that needs to be addressed. And unfortunately, it's not going to take the purview of the legislative oversight. The Department of Health Services has been granted authority to review and make recommendations on how it's going to purport to make those cuts.
Mr. Schultz, as you've taken notes here and stuff, I mean, we have all this down on paper, so if you don't have this from all of the different departments, and the summary that Mr. De La Rosa is talking about, we'll be happy to get that to you. Okay? Thank you, Mr. De La Rosa. Conclusion, please.
Sure. With that said, the possible impact of county departments to take place with budget cuts in the area of MA could be the Department on Aging, Department of Family Care, Divisions of Behavioral Health and Disabilities Unit. Those could be the impacted areas which we do not have a fiscal handle on and won't until after the department has decided how it's going to administer its cuts. So potentially this could be a huge cut, particularly given the so-called savings that are purported to be in the budget. There is not an offset with relationship to those cuts. With that said, there's another area of family care and the creation of capping the enrollment that creates difficulties in trying to get a fiscal handle on that. Although it's understood it will create a waiting list for individuals, for seniors, elderly, and disabled individuals. We'll have a cost, and we'll also have a cost to a more cost-based expense to the state if implemented. With that said, more specifics regarding the impact of the property tax restraint items contained in the budget repair bill, as well as the budget repair bill, will be provided by DAS Fiscal St. Paul.
Are you ready for that, then? Do we have any questions first? Supervisor Procasio, you want to go now, or do you want to wait?
I could anchor it, because I want to say something about the overall.
Okay, sure. Sure, we'll have a chance, committee, on the chance to do that then. So, Ms. Paul, your time on the clock then, so introduce yourselves for everybody listening and everyone else here, maybe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, supervisors. I am CJ Paul. I am the Interim Assistant Fiscal and Budget Administrator. John Regini recently left, so I have taken his spot temporarily. So the few things I wanted to touch on today were the property tax levy. We have we are now limited right now to the rate of net new construction, which in 2010 was less than 1%.
0.6, I think it was.
Right. And there was also a change to the formula in how we calculate the tax levy. So right now, DAS is currently projecting a tax levy increase for 2012 of $1 to $2 million. We won't have our exact formula until about August 15th, I believe, is when we can actually calculate the numbers.
Okay.
Now, with regards to the budget repair bill, our 2011 adopted budget assumes $19.4 million in savings. Looking forward into 2012, we assume that we will get $16.3 million of those savings. The difference is due to the deputy sheriffs and the firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
What our report also accounts for is a pension contribution of 6%,
yes,
which is an increase of 2% over the 4% in our current budget. That would give us an additional savings of $3.7 million. In addition, we also assume in these numbers that we're going to apply our 2011 healthcare plan to all employees. That gets us an additional savings of $3.7 million. Assuming all of these changes, we end up with $23 million in savings to offset our $25 million in reductions. So we should have a $2 million deficit going forward into 2012. Unfortunately, we already have $16.3 million built into our current year base, which means looking forward into 2012, we have an $18 million hole or a gap that we have to fill. To put this into a cost-sharing perspective for you, an employee cost-sharing perspective, in 2010, our average non-rep employees contributed 3.4% of their salary to their healthcare costs. In addition to that, with a 6% pension contribution, we will be assuming about a 9.4% salary contribution from all of our employees. That is the summation of the whole budget repair bill. If you have questions or would like additional details.
I guess I'll let the committee talk first.
comment, and that is that this particular piece of the budget and everything is going to also be on the Personnel Committee on Friday. And at agenda setting, I asked, and Mr. Regini was there, and I don't know if he's disseminated this before he left, but if all of the county board members could have, in essence, a cheat sheet summarizes so that when we get calls from the trades or fighters or whatever, we'll be able to say, okay, this is what it means and that kind of stuff. And I realize the budget repair bill, as far as when that takes place, we're not sure when that's going to be, but eventually it's going to happen. And so I think we should all anticipate that we're going to get questions from our constituents who are workers, our constituents who are retirees, and it would just make sense to have just a simple, in essence, cheat sheet that we can look down and versus having to chase after staff people all the time.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you, Supervisor. And the understanding, as Paul talked about early on, is nothing that's going to occur. It's this budget repair bill. There's going to be a two-month gap. It's in litigation right now. 2 months in litigation usually means 6 months. 6 months means a year, you know, what we've seen in different other scenarios. So I don't think we're going to be seeing something very soon, I guess, is my point. Deputy sheriffs and firefighters, thank you very much. Police deputy sheriffs, firefighters have no repercussions under this law, okay? So they will not be hit with these extra charges. That's what you talked about early on. You talked about the 19.4 versus 16.3 because we can't make up that gap because deputy sheriffs and firefighters are not under this contract, nor any contract. That's what the governor passed. He let them be able to pass whatever you want to talk about. Okay? And then, of course, we're going to lose savings as we always do because until something happens, the budget repair bill passes, which we presume it will, but it will be a long period here yet, is that none of these savings can be asked for, okay? So that's the understanding we all have, too, I presume, right? Okay? And then, Supervisor, you can follow up, and I'll go to you, Supervisor.
Sure. Thank you. And just to piggyback on that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's correct. Okay. Thank you.
Well, and I guess I think we're all thinking the same thing, is that because of how long this is being prolonged, the term retroactivity comes into play, and if it's 6 months and then all of a sudden that paycheck, that person's paycheck, they may be paying money back to the county, when all the retroactivity takes place. I think we've got to be careful of that because that is a distinct possibility. I mean, why wouldn't they go retroactive?
Well, but when we passed, we said this, for example, we started with paying for pensions for all non-refs, as everybody knows, okay? And we said this payment from our representative employees could not start, so it won't be able to go retroactive, it cannot start until the contract is signed, until the state budget bill is passed. So there's no way to go back and ask them to pay the contribution for the pension, for example. Once that bill is passed, everybody will be on the 6%. We figure out that's the actuarial, the financial people know more than I know. All I know is that you take it in half, the total payment is, and that half is the employee contribution. And our pension payments are in the 12% range, right, Mr. Katie? And so we're looking at roughly 6%. We did 4%, actually we're doing 2-1-1. So that would accelerate it. When that passes, all of us will be paying 6%, but the unions will not be able to go back. Our represented people, we can't go back and ask them because it specifically said that they would not happen until the bill was actually passed. And also you mentioned about retirees, is that some of the information for the in the healthcare area, deducts going up, co-pays, that cannot happen until the budget repair bill goes in. And then we have to give them at least 30-day notice because I've had calls from seniors already too, and I said, anything you're doing, I guess that's the word to get out for all of us, isn't it? Anything you're doing, just go along and do. Nothing's changed, and nothing has changed for our retirees until, again, this bill passes. Then we will send out a notice what ramifications will be. We'll give them at least 30 days to get this information and say, 30 days won't do anything for at least 30 days. here's the questions and answers, and we'll have time to attack that. So that's the situation as far as I know. I think they're just kind of out of their heads, so I guess that's right. Are you done, please?
Sure.
Okay, for now?
Yes.
Supervisor Broderick, then?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have something of a semantic objection. We continue to refer to this as the budget repair bill.
You could say SB 10, if you like.
Yeah, well, I think we're being kind of snookered into using the language that, in fact, is a misstatement of the intent of this. Were it to be called the Quality of Life Evisceration Bill, I think it would be more to the point. But
I'd be disappointed if you wouldn't have called.
But I have heard the more neutral term budget adjustment bill, which I think, in all fairness, better describes what's going on here. I like the evisceration of quality of life myself, but we'll see if it catches it.
It is catchy. Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Weishaupt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
I just want to make sure I have this right, that, okay, the state has potentially passed down $25 million worth of cuts. We have been supposedly given this toolbox of tools to hopefully to address that $25 million. But because Milwaukee County, because I guess you could say we were ahead of the curve, that we already deployed roughly $16 million of those tools, so that we could only do an additional roughly $6 to $7 million worth of, you know, tools, and, you know, as Supervisor Broderick, you know, maybe the terminology, we could employ more cuts to our employees to roughly about $6 or $7 million. So that leaves us, even if with an increase in the tax levy, we have roughly about an $18 million problem. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors,
sure.
That is
Thank
correct.
You.
Okay. We were able to identify about $7 million worth of changes that we could possibly look forward to implementing in 2012. There's possibly additional changes based on what your decisions are as well. It's a floor, necessarily not a ceiling where we're at.
But since I guess there is a ceiling on the tax levy, mm-hmm. that what this really is the state control forcing local cuts, because the only options we have are you either eliminate personnel, you eliminate services, because you can't go on the revenue side of the situation here. Am I correct in that?
That would be one, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, that would be one option, to eliminate personnel or services, look for additional revenues, different ways to fill that hole. However we can do it, because you're right, we only have about, you know, $1 to $2 million in additional property tax levy that we can look forward to, or we could implement into our 2012 budget. So the rest of it would have to be made up by a combination of all of those things.
Right. I think that needs to be really clear, because there's, you know, the county has basically only, like, literally a handful. There's five revenue streams of sales tax, property taxes, fees, and then state and federal aid. And if you're going to cut, the state aid, and I don't see a huge truck pulling up from the federal government to bail us out, that we have to, you can either reduce services, you can increase fees. I'm not aware if there's any cap on the increases in any types of fees, as there is similar to property tax levy.
None that
yeah,
I don't
think so.
Okay, and so, you know, I think there is this, you know, game being played here, that even if communities wanted to make a lot of different changes, that the state isn't allowing it. So that just the falsehood of this being somehow local control, it's not. The state has put us in a corner, so that your only way out of that corner is to reduce services, and you know, cut employees. That's it. It's to reduce services. This is shrinking government. It's eliminating government, and even basic services, to the point where I could see
even though we don't have a large number, relatively speaking, of public safety as far as like deputy sheriffs, that you would have to say that that's a thing that you have to look at. One, you know, if you're a small town in Wisconsin, you're going to have to look at getting rid of a police officer or a firefighter, and we're seriously going to have to look at how many deputy sheriffs that we have, how many, you know, park workers we have, how many people you have working in these areas, because where else does it come? Because you can't, we don't have any options. And the only thing that we get to do is take all the blame. And I think this is just a classic shirking of total responsibility at the state level to claim this falsehood that they've given us tools, because Milwaukee County hasn't been given tools, and, you know, to claim that somehow it's just as easy as, you know, we're just going to, and you're going to somehow have the same Milwaukee County, the same level of service that you had last year going forward. And it's just not possible. And I think it's a total, you know, not surprising with this person as governor, that it is a total deception and deceiving of the public of the situation. Because he doesn't have the guts to come down to anybody's community, whether it's in northern Wisconsin or southeastern Wisconsin, and say, you know what, I'm going to cut your fire department, or I'm going to cut your public works, or I'm going to cut your zoo, and all that kind of stuff. Because he's probably the most cowardly governor we've ever had in our history. And we've known that, at least I have, ever since he was county executive. And this is just the three-card Monty game that he's playing with the budget to disguise that. So, you know, I guess that, you know, I just wanted to be clear, try and lay it out that, you know, there's no option other than cutting services.
Supervisor Broderick,
I'm not through, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Now
your turn. The subject of shrinking government that my colleague Supervisor Weishan raises is, of course, the idea first talked about in mass media terms by Grover Norquist. And I can't help but wonder if the bathtub intended to drown government in is under construction in the state capital budget, or if it's being privately financed by corporations. Just, it's a rhetorical question, yes. I'll grant, but I think that bathtub is real, and the intent of those who would drown the people's government in it is equally real. And you got to wonder who's funding that, don't you? I mean, to make serious comment on this budget is enough to make one begin to weep publicly. This is an attack on the people of this state, and particularly the people who are not in a position to be able to wield any kind of power in their own self-defense. It's shameful, but of course the people of Wisconsin elected this governor. I wonder if they do so again, and I think we're going to have an opportunity to discover whether or not that's the case. How in the world can you treat something like this as anything but what it is? And to talk about it in these terms of dollars here and lost there, it dignifies it in ways that, to my mind, it sticks in my throat. It's so troublesome. It is un-American.
Thank you, Supervisor. Ms. Paul, anything else?
Try to top that. That wasn't that easy, Jay.
Well, we weren't looking at anything rhetorical from you. We were looking at facts here.
I wouldn't touch it either.
Yeah. Supervisor, Mr. Cady, any comments from you?
Just a couple. Thank you. I wanted to underscore. Okay. I think Supervisor Weishan touched on this, and that is the value of the fiscal tools that the county's been given. Just another way of looking at it, mm-hmm. is that 70% of the value of that tool has been used up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in essence, the county has been punished because you actually took the lead in extending pension contribution requirements on employees and requiring higher co-pays and deductibles for health care. Because now the tools
that you've
been
given,
pension multiplier, all the items that you've seen really have reduced the value of the tools you've been given by a considerable amount when compared to other municipalities, local governments throughout the state. So that said, that's pretty important. One other thing that Paul mentioned was the tax levy limits.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward, you've also taken strides to really reduce your debt service here. And you've put a limit on bonding. You have reduced the capital borrowing. That was designed to pay off with lower debt service costs in the future. You've refinanced debt at lower interest costs. You've done a lot of things knowing that a lower capital debt service cost will translate into lower debt service costs that will give you money to pay for operating side of the ledger. Under the debt service, under the tax levy limits, if you have a lowering debt service, you not only don't get any credit for that, you have to lower your levy. It's not a zero tax levy increase. You have to lower. So in the future years, if this would become law,
mm-hmm.
as our debt service is lowered, you won't, after all that work you've done to lower your debt service costs, you won't be able to use it to offset and retain programs and services on the programmatic side. And I think that's something that's very concerning about the tax levy limit as it's currently drafted.
Thank you, Mr. Sunshine.
But doing that certainly keeps our bond rating strong, et cetera, too. That's part of the philosophy, too, correct? So that would be the positive point.
But there's really no...
Or not really.
Mr. Chairman, when it comes to the bonding, when we meet with bond rating agencies, they want to know, do you have the capacity to pay back the monies that you're borrowing? And one of the things that makes them nervous is the fact that we're not allowed to really retain balances, fund balances, trust funds, rainy day funds, whatever. And do we have a taxing authority to enable to collect the monies to pay back the bondholders? That's being further constrained. These items will make bond rating agencies more nervous about future debt the county takes on because of our limited tools in order to pay back the bondholders.
Thank you, Mr. Kay, very much. Yes, and we have taken some positive steps and done some things, used the tools, and we're all familiar with that, so we'll just... I guess it's because we were proactive and we did some things. Thank you for reminding us of that. Now, where it is a point here, now we have, I see Ms. Ledger here, we have family care, Ms. Stein, Ms. Lide, I think about behavioral health for DHHS, Ms. Joe Marsh, child support. We have reports, transit, Mr. Grant, that I mentioned, yes. I think those are the, I hit all the major ones that we did talk about. I didn't mention. Or legal?
No, I did mention it first.
Okay. Anyway, it's family care. We do have, or maybe twice, good. We do have reports, so I, Mr. Rosa or Ms. Paul, can I suggest that they would just come up briefly? And obviously, we have reports, we'll get the reports, everybody who needs reports, this is what we're working on. I guess I would ask you to summarize the situation from your perspective. I mean, we are in this limbo, we all understand that, so we have to project. But what we're doing in our projections and what do we see as a possibility in helping this situation we're in. And we want to get all our information to our representatives so they understand what we're going through here, too. They did hear the public testimony. A lot of our community representatives were there, even though they're not in joint finance. So they heard a lot of this we had at the State Fair Park on Monday. And we'll make sure we get that to our representatives, too. So... Del Rosa, is that your suggestion, too, we do it that way? Okay, Ms. Paul, thank you very much. All right. I don't care who comes up first. Anybody would just come up and volunteer? All right. Thank you, Ms. Stein. You
been here all day. I've got to go back and
summarize for us.
Except
it
was at the Oasis.
Introduce yourselves always, okay, please. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Stein. I'm the director of the Milwaukee County Department on Aging. With me is...
Jonette Arms, assistant director. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The interesting news is that our budget has absolutely no... There are no implications for our budget whatsoever in this repair bill. Our funding sources are stable, et cetera. The bad news is there are huge implications for older people in this community that will make our lives and your lives extremely difficult, explaining to people why we are enacting these new draconian cuts. The first and biggest thing is family care, and I know Director Lide and Director Ledger will also talk to you about this. So I'm going to talk to you about it from the point of view of older people.
Good, thank you.
And Jerry can do disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. So since November of 2002, when we ended our waiting list for older people, we have not had a waiting list for family care for older people in this county. Consequently, we have done a lot of counseling with families and older people about how to spend their money wisely so as to avoid getting on Medicaid and having to use family care, i.e., older people who are often reluctant to rely on their children, so they hoard money and refuse to spend it on themselves. They hold on to it for their security, have been convinced by us and by their children to spend that money on services, to buy some housekeeping services, some transportation, some adult daycare, etc., so that when they get to $2,000, they will not need to worry. We will be there with family care and be able to help them stay in their homes and their communities. As of the day after June 23rd, that will no longer be the case. We will be telling those people, you will now be going on a waiting list. And since you have a great deal of needs, that waiting list will probably end up in a nursing home visit, which will cost the state and federal government over twice as much as family care. We have also, in family care, residential care is a benefit under family care, and so many older people, when it comes time that they need to live someplace with some help, move into group homes, which we call community-based residential facilities, or move into assisted living, which we call residential care apartment complexes, or adult family homes. But before they move, we caution them, please make sure that you're moving into a family care a facility that has a contract with one of the family care organizations. Because if you don't, when you spend your money in 6 months or 2 years or 5 years, when your money's gone and you only have $2,000, family care will be there to pay for those services that you need in that residential facility. The day after June 23rd of this year, that will no longer be the case. They will not have any funds to pay that residential facility, and I can assure you those residential facilities are not charitable organizations and will not keep those people there. They will ask them to leave. As a matter of fact, they will ask them to leave as their savings reach the $2,000 mark when they have no help available. The other thing I pointed out this morning at Human Needs, and I'd like you to understand, is that the Secretary of the Department of Health Services, Dennis Smith, when I speak to him and others speak to him, say, well, these people have a Medicaid card. So it's not like they're going to be without services. They can buy transportation and personal care and home health. What he fails to recognize or doesn't recognize is that older people do not come to us on Medicaid. They come to us with an income, and when they're finally eligible for our programs, $2,000 of assets, period. And their income is used to help pay for the cost of their services. This is what we call nursing home Title 19, but it applies to all the home and community-based programs also, which means that you don't have any assets, you have income, your care plan is an amount of money. You will pay almost all of your income towards that care plan, which will give you a Medicaid card. That Medicaid card will pay for your home and community-based services. You will contribute to those services according to the things that, you know, there are some things that we deduct. But if that person were living in their home in the community and spent down to $2,000 or a group home, they were not eligible for Medicaid. Their income is too high to make them eligible for Medicaid because they're living in the community. That's called community Medicaid. So older people will not have a Medicaid card to fall back on to buy personal care, home health care, etc. They will not have any of that help. Therefore, their option is a waiting list with no care, which will put them at great jeopardy, or a nursing home bed. This is complicated by the fact that since family care began in Milwaukee County in 2000 for older people, we have closed 15 nursing homes. Those beds are no longer available to us because, given a business capitalistic model, people did not need nursing homes anymore. They could stay in their homes and their communities. And Family Care contracts with hundreds of other businesses, profit and nonprofit, to provide services to people. So the business model in this community shifted from nursing home care to home and community-based services, and there are not sufficient Medicaid nursing home beds in this county to handle all of the older people that would be going on waiting lists. Our resource center enrolls about 150 older people in one of the family care programs every month. So that's Family Care, Partnership, PACE, or IRIS. There are four programs. And about 100 people overall in all of those programs leave family care, older people leave family care every month due to dying, moving out of state, etc. So that would leave 50 people every month who would go on a waiting list, if that were the only waiting list in Milwaukee County, but it isn't. There will still be 2,000 people with disabilities on waiting lists, plus people with disabilities getting in line for the next waiting list every day. So a slot, as the state would call it, which are frozen, is not necessarily going to go to an older person. Director Lyde and I'm sure, will come to some amicable solution, but people on disabilities very seldom leave the program. They are younger, they are not near death, et cetera. They're going to stay on a much longer time. They're not going to have that turnover. So we're going to have to figure out how to help some of those people advance in family care also when a slot opens up.
You're talking about all the numbers are under 65.
Yes,
right?
yes. So there are going to be thousands of people who have been promised home and community-based care entitlement in this county who will not get it. We need to start telling people that now, because people have been making plans for years about spending their money wisely, which has been one of our mandates. Help people spend their money wisely so they avoid going on Medicaid till the very last minute, but when they need it, it will be there. Family care will be there. So, again, that is not going to be a pleasant situation. Senior care is the other huge program that affects older people. It is Wisconsin's alternative to Medicare Part D. The same aforementioned Secretary Smith does not like senior care. So everyone will be forced to join Medicare Part D. This will cost people at a minimum $1,200 extra a year for a far inferior benefit that is not necessary. The Wisconsin Senior Care Program costs the federal government substantially less than senior care. So the federal government will be paying more than they do pay for someone on Medicare Part D. And older people will be dipping into their pockets for $1,200 for what? I mean, we don't know. And the secretary is very vague about what the wraparound is, so we don't have any idea what that is, nor does the Legislative Fiscal Bureau or anyone else. So that's pretty hard to determine. Now, the only good news is that so far two senators on Joint Finance Committee, who one would expect to vote for the budget, have said they will not vote to eliminate senior care, and we're hoping that more people will get on that bandwagon. It's 93,000 people that would be affected. Transportation will affect us, but I'll let other people talk about that when they talk about paratransit. But we get transportation money through the S8521 program, the state specialized transportation. That money remains in the segregated fund. But there is no increase in that money. There's usually a cost of living increase in that money. There has been for the last 3 years. There is none, which means we will give fewer rides. So
at least it's in the segregated fund.
At least it's in the segregated fund. So, but we will give fewer rides to doctors, meal sites, for spouses who have their other spouse in a nursing home. We will not be able to give all the rides that we give this year. And then there's the benefit specialist program, which is our people who are attached to our resource center who help people with their benefits. If the senior care thing goes through and they have to help people with Medicare Part D, which takes about an hour and a half a person, they're not going to be able to do anything else. So all of the work that they do with veterans programs and other railroad retirement programs and food share, all of that work will go by the wayside as they try and help. There are over 8,000 people in Milwaukee County on senior care. Try and help them find a Medicare Part D program.
Yeah, and I apologize for being a little late. We had a very, very long Health and Human Needs Committee meeting where we talked about a lot of these same things, and I just needed a small break in between there. But the same thing I asked in Health and Human Needs, I know Dr. Stein said we could talk about it in transit, but I think it's important because this part of it,
right,
while it is transit, really affects seniors. And I see here that we have on this committee, except for one person whose district will be severely impacted, CSAR's district, paratransit, well, of course, I'm talking about who I haven't heard speak out on this, is paratransit will be very, it'll be very difficult, and the areas will be negligible. This is what I talked about at the JFC committee, or JFC hearing, is that some of these areas, Franklin, Oak Creek, the North Shore areas, Bayside, whatever, I don't even know how there'll be service out there at all, and I want to talk a little bit about that. So if we just have Director Stein talk a little bit more.
Sure.
I'm sure that we'll talk about it in transit, but I think it really belongs here because it's something that just affects, it will affect seniors and disabled people.
I guess the boundary limits and how that...
Yeah. So the paratransit rules are that you only have to provide paratransit services along fixed bus routes. And there are no fixed bus routes in a great deal of this county in which older people and people with disabilities live and use paratransit services to perform the functions of their life, and they will have no transit options available to them at all. And, you know, we're talking about almost all of Oak Creek and all of Franklin that have the highest growing number of older people in this county that will have no services available to them, any paratransit. And there are other places in this county, too. You all know better than I do where the fixed bus routes are. And if paratransit has to cut back, which I don't know anyway, it won't have to, given what's going on, and you'll hear more about that from Director Ledger, providing rides to folks will be a thing of the past. And you imagine yourself not being able to leave your home for anything anymore because there's no service available at all.
Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you. Supervisor Broderick, you went?
Yeah, just briefly, would it be unfair, given the characterization that you made regarding the impacts on affected individuals in this thing, would it be unfair to characterize that as an evisceration of their quality of life?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You don't like that word, don't you?
Okay, maybe then, for no other questions, maybe Ms. Ledger and Ms. Levy kind of tag team and kind of just follow up and just add on and any note of who might be seeking some help here. You can introduce yourselves and decide who wants to go first. Thank you very much, both of you.
Jerry Lide, Interim Director of Department of Health and Human Services.
Good afternoon. Maria Ledger, the Interim Executive Director for the Department of Family Care.
Let me go. I'll start. I just like to echo, I think, what Stephanie said. I think the whole impact on family care and on younger folks with disabilities, where we just really got started, you know, we really have only been starting to serve individuals for about the last year. We started with a 3,000-person waiting list. We have that down now to 2,000. Another impact of the cap on family care is that we also provide services to families who have children with disabilities. And those individuals who are participating in children's waivers can automatically transition into family care at the age of 18. And last year, we were pretty successful in eliminating a 500-person waiting list in this community for children and families with disabilities. And now, not having that ability for those individuals at 18 to transfer into family care, we're going to see that waiting list continue to rise. And that certainly, I think, when you look at those families who have kids, it has certainly been a huge, huge inspiration for them, not knowing what was going to happen after they graduated from high school, what they were going to do, and for those that needed that benefit, that was another, I think, asset to having family care. So that's going to be significantly impacted. Also, the other piece that is very much concerned is the $500 million cut in Medicaid. And we don't know what that's going to be right now. It is in the budget. They have authority to make some changes on that. In fact, there's a hearing at Zufari tomorrow just on the Medicaid piece, the $500 million. But for DHHS, we have a number of programs that are supported through Medicaid. Not only Children's Waiver, we have programs in Behavioral Health Division. We have inpatient, outpatient, community-based programs, community support, targeted case management. The wraparound program is Medicaid funded. So there are a number of programs that are supported Medicaid. Our crisis service are all Medicaid funding. So until we really know what those changes are going to be, that is a real concern as to how that might have some significant impact on the department. We've estimated that about $44 million of our revenue comes from Medicaid. So, you know, they could change the eligibility, they could have some other reductions. So until we really see how that's going to play out, I think we just are very, very concerned. Also, there are some potential cuts in GPR revenue, and we have about $980,000 of GPR revenue within the budget for 2011, and then in 2012 that increases to $1.2 million. That is directly client services. If that cut occurs, we will have to replace that or definitely reduce client services. That's in our alcohol and mental health area. Those are programs that are supported with that GPR revenue. There's also a reduction in our delinquency services. There is a cut in 2011 of $1.8 million and $3.6 million in 2012. So here again, we're going to see some potential reductions in that area as well. And then the last areas are income maintenance. Included in the budget is highlighted that the state intends to centralize all of the income maintenance functions at the state level. Of course, Milwaukee County, they're already running the income maintenance program, and they are just leasing space out of the Cox Center. But there's a proposal of about 272 positions that will be eliminated out of that budget. We understand that statewide, but considering that Milwaukee County is the only county where it's state-operated, that could have an impact on us as well. And then we would, of course, see some legacy costs if those positions were to be eliminated that we would have to incur, as well as we have a building now in which they're leasing from us, the Cox Center, and they occupy the first floor and the second floor. So if they were to vacate and those positions were to go, there's rent from that building that we would not realize and have to seek new tenants for our Cox Center. So there are a lot of unanswered questions about the income maintenance piece. We believe we are pretty close to finalizing a lease for 211, but I think 212 is still up in the air. They offer very few details about what's going to happen. I think they're still really trying to figure out how they can operate this from a statewide perspective. So I think the potential for us could be rather devastating in a number of ways, our alcohol and mental health programs. The last point I want to make about family care is, and Stephanie made this earlier, is whenever you transition from the waivers to family care, there is a local contribution. And Milwaukee County contributed about $8 million of our BCA that was rolled in to the capitated rate. So a lot of that money, which was, you know, paying to support services, is gone. So we really have no dollars for any kind of safety net services. And if we see some additional GPR being cut, it really begins to erode any of that funding that was supporting folks that perhaps were non-Medicaid eligible. So I think that that is a concern, because you don't have much any of those flexible dollars left. And then the few flexible dollars that we do have left supports programs like emergency shelters, domestic violence shelters, really some of those homeless shelters. There's small amounts of money, but that is funded with GPR, and that certainly could potentially be impact and cut as well.
Thank you, Ms. Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, County Board Supervisors. As you've heard, this proposed cap on enrollments is going to have a huge ripple effect. If we are only allowed, or any managed care program is only allowed to enroll up to the amount where someone has left the program, there will obviously be no new growth. We've asked the state for specifics about under what circumstances someone would leave a program that would allow someone else to come in. Is it that a person is deceased? If they voluntarily disenroll and go to another geographic area, is that someone that we can replace? If they go to another program within Milwaukee County, is that someone we can replace? There's lots of unanswered questions in terms of how these caps are going to be managed. Are they going to be statewide? Are they going to be in Milwaukee County? Are they going to be program by program? And there really hasn't been anything definitive forthcoming about how these are to be managed. We're also concerned with any change in income maintenance. People have to go through the resource centers and have to go through income maintenance in order to come into a program. If there's a change in how the income maintenance operation is administered, what kind of delays might we see for people coming in and coming out of the program? When people are disenrolled for failure to pay cost share, they have to go through that income maintenance route. So in order to be someplace else, they have to disenroll from the program that they're currently in. So there's a lot of sort of hidden details, some of which are pretty unappealing, that we haven't gotten really anything firm from the state on. What we do know is that for every person that enrolls in family care into the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care, that capitation rate that we receive from the state, that per member per month rate, is about $2,800. Now, we spend about 95% of that cap rate on member services and the things that people need to stay in the community. So it's a pretty low administrative rate to run an organization this size and to provide care to 7,600 members. There are some other very large provider groups who have asked the state to take a look at the administrative costs of all the MCOs. I don't know what every other managed care organization has. Mine's low.
Can I break in? I'm sorry, because, yep. I mean, you made some specific points in looking for ways to petition our representatives and the governor to look at it, and if there truly are cost savings. Now, you talk about in a letter to Secretary Smith, who's been mentioned a couple of times, at the Department of Health Services, that we were wanted to be the sole MCO, for Milwaukee County for family care.
Mm-hmm.
You state in your letter that, you know, we could save the state's Medicaid budget over $600,000 a year if we were the sole Medicaid MCO.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes along and follows up into the traditional home health KTC model that might
right.
talk about rather than going to nursing homes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been, of course, this is April 12th, so I'm presuming you haven't received a response or
correct.
I'm sure we work with staff on this. So certainly these are legitimate numbers that we can show where the savings are be, and we hope, just as was stated before, that there, as specifics come out, and it's our responsibility then to take the information we're getting, these are true numbers, to work with our staff, as you have already, and I'm asking them to continue this, okay, and staff, Mr. Del Rose or Ms. Babich, if you have a hold, then I'm sure the people we have had have been very cooperative, all our speakers so far, and we have two left, okay, have cooperated and will cooperate. If they want to do the best, then you've done yeoman job, so I'll be nice and certainly mean that.
Okay.
I'm sure we all agree with that. But that this kind of, you know, we need responses on this, and we need to get it, and I think, hope, I will even pray, that's indeed, okay, that that when more than joint finance and people get these kinds of information, they'll see there are cost savings if we do some of the things the experts are telling about. I don't think the legislators are any more experts than us sitting around this table in these areas. And they need to get this information, and I would think, unless they have heart of hearts, that they would, you know, fiscally, responsibly respond to some of the things that are being brought up today. So I guess I just encourage you to make sure to follow up and work with our staff and then report to us next time. And all of you, and any responses we get, you need to do your own thing and work with your sources, but we need to work with the governmental staff, too, to make sure we have one voice, they are our voice, make sure it's coordinated, and that we surely get this information to all our representatives. So let's make sure we're doing that. The best way to make sure to do that, again, is to make sure our staff gets this information so they can coordinate and get it to all I would presume, I'm not talking out of place here, that any information we're sharing with our own individual representatives, we're also sharing with the Joint Finance Committee. Is that something we can add? Is that something we're doing right away? Can I just break the second to ask that question?
Well, initially, we would try to find.
Okay, great. All right, sorry, Ms. Ledger, but
that's
I thought it was important maybe somehow to make that point. So, okay, continue, please, and follow up. Or
absolutely.
Summarize, thank you.
I will summarize. So we're concerned about the enrollment caps. We want to make sure that everybody who requires this service, who needs community support to stay as safely and healthily in the community as they can, has it. We don't want to see unnecessary emergency room hospitalizations. We don't want to see unnecessary nursing home stays. When people come out of the hospital and go into a nursing home for a temporary stay, if they don't have a nurse and a social worker to help them, we don't want that to turn into a permanent stay. So we're working very hard in getting that kind of information to both the secretary, the deputy secretary, and joint finance, and presenting them with some other options, other ways that they can make up this Medicaid deficit that don't impact on the lives of older adults and people with disabilities.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Supervisor Broderick?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be interested in knowing whether Ms. Lyday or Ms. Ledger would argue with my characterization that these impacts, potential, given the passage of the governor's of Act 10,
SB 10.
SB 10.
Yes, that's part of the repair bill.
Yeah. You did it again.
Well, that's the title, I'm sorry.
If it's unfair to characterize these as an evisceration of the quality of life of those that you serve.
I don't believe that, Mr. Chair, County Board Supervisors, I don't believe that's an unfair characterization, no.
Ms. Lyday?
I don't either. I believe that's pretty accurate. Just the other comment I did make, the transportation, it also will significantly impact folks' ability to work, go to school. There are a number of individuals with disabilities who are working every day, who are going to school. Changes in transportation are really impact the quality of life of folks' ability to get around and to get out. And it is such a vital service of how folks maintain being integrated and full partners in this community. So I just wanted to comment that the transportation cuts equally will have such a significant impact on how people live their lives.
Thank you both. I would remind the chair while we're praying that these deprivations proposed are brought to us by the minister's son. Gloves are off. Gloves are off.
Really?
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you, ladies, indeed, yes. And for the second time in a row, we're going to ask Mr. Grant, as the gentleman, no, Mr. Grant, you're not coming up. I'm not calling you. Sorry. No, sorry. I'm seeing you're the gentleman of the crowd once again, and Ms. Marks is before you, and we've kind of summarized some of your points, but I will give you a chance momentarily. Thank you, sir, for your patience in coming again. Ms. Marks, you have the floor. You have introduce yourself, please.
Lisa Marks, the Director for the Department of Child Support Enforcement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the opportunity to speak today on this issue. I've updated this committee several times, but we do have a new development. As you know, there was a technical discrepancy coming from Governor Doyle's budget into Governor Walker's budget. In the last biennium, Joint Finance Committee allocated $8.5 million to the child support program statewide. That also draws a two-thirds federal match. Because at that time, stimulus funding was available, an actual expenditure of only $4.25 million was used. When the budget was certified to create the base level, it went at the expenditure level of 4.25 instead of the original allocation by the Joint Finance Committee of $8.5 million. The net effect of this is about a 50% cut in services. I'm sort of lost track of what you'd like to call the budget adjustment correction bill. However, that
Check
bill does not have an impact as we are in calendar year 2011, and that is due to the expertise of Mr. De La Rosa and Ms. Bablich. In a 1310 hearing in the final hours of 2000, previous joint finance, in the final hours of 2010, they were able to assist in getting a allocation of funds that were available in the Department of Children and Families that was payable to the counties in 2010 to be used for the 2011 contracts. Therefore, the fiscal impact for 2011 is nothing. So that's the good news. Mm-hmm. The bad news is as we go forward into the new biennial budget, there is an impact because of that technical discrepancy. A 50% cut across all 71, 72 counties is substantial. For Milwaukee County, that's $1.2 million plus our two-thirds federal match on that money, which is the equivalent of $3.6 million.
I get the 3.6 we've talked about, yes.
The impacts that you're going to see to constituents is that people are going to wait longer for services. Children are going to go without having paternity established. People are going to become much more dependent on social services, food stamps, medical assistance, possibly TANF, because they're not getting their child support money. The child support program is a very fiscally sound program. For every dollar that is put into this program for administrative expenses in my office, we are able to collect $6 and distribute that to parents. Now, that's not public funds. That's through wage garnishments from people's employers, and that is spent immediately on food, clothing, shelter. It's put right back into the economy. No one is saving a huge bank account. They're using it for their daily expenses for their children. For every $4 that is spent in administrative cost, $5 is saved in those programs, medical assistance, food stamps, housing, medical assistance. And so this is really a program that makes fiscal sense. The new development that we have going forward is there was a March 23rd, 25th, a March letter, in which the Legislative Audit Bureau discovered $12 million in the Department of Children and Families budget that involved the TANF program and random moment sampling, and they believe that that money is available for use. There was a letter published by the Walker's administration that recommended putting that money into the general fund. If that administration would just, in joint finance, would look at taking a piece of that money, $4.25 million or a little bit more, and invest it in the child support program, we can draw two-thirds federal match and have $12 million back into the program, so almost the equal amount that they have in found money from the Legislative Audit Bureau. So that is a positive finding. We've brought that forward to members of Joint Finance, other members of our delegation, so they know that that option is available, provided them with information on this program making fiscal sense and how it benefits the community to make sure that families are economically stable. One other concern that I did want to mention that pertains to the income maintenance and changes to that division, the large portion of referrals that child support receives comes from the Department of Health Services, which runs the food share, medical assistance, and child care. Anyone who is receiving medical assistance or child care must cooperate with our office or they risk losing their benefits. They also must cooperate if they're with a TANF agency. The TANF agencies have stayed relatively stable. Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, what is known as W-2. They've stayed relatively stable, and we've had a good relationship on exchanging data. With the changes with the Department of Health Services and the Department of Children and Families taking over their piece running Milwaukee County, we've encountered some problems. Our computer system talks to their computer system in an overnight process, and they send us referrals. And our performance, our federal performance, is based on our number of cases. When there's errors on their side in making referrals, that sort of causes our caseload to expand erroneously, thus decreasing our ability to earn revenue. Over the past number of months, we've worked very closely with some of the members of the Department of Health Services. We're still having some challenges. Just today, talked to them about a case in which, you know, there's nothing else we can do. Unfortunately, the parent was deceased. We closed the case, said, please stop sending the referral. Just this morning, two new referrals for a parent that's deceased. There's nothing more we can do. That case then counts against us in our performance standards as we move forward. And so I'm very concerned, as the income maintenance is expanded statewide, how that will affect not only Milwaukee's performance, but the entire state's performance in the child support community.
Is this the same comment, Supervisor?
It is.
Okay.
It is a question of Ms. Marks regarding the impacts on those her department serves.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's discrete and separate from what others have answered. And so I would make the same inquiry as to whether or not a 50% cut in your attempted service delivery, if it's unfair or extreme of me to characterize that as an evisceration of their quality of life.
I think for the children that we serve in this community, that's a correct statement.
I'd like to thank you, thank Ms. Lydee, thank Stephanie Sustein for the work that you do in the face of these kinds of onsets of evisceration. You made the reference before to fiscal sense. I think that we've seen that ideological sense trumps fiscal sense at every turn in this budget. And it's brought to us by, the Christian approach, or perhaps this sets up a tension between what many of us would interpret as the Christian approach and the governor's approach. I'll leave that to him to explain. Thank you, Ms. Marks.
I guess the chairman will say thank you, too. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee
members.
You're
welcome. Thank you. Mr. Grant, you are up. Thank you. And Mr. Juno, yeah, can introduce themselves.
Is the handbasket motorized, and are you going to help?
I don't know. Thank
you. You can answer Supervisor Broderick's question to start with after you introduce yourself.
We know what he's going to ask. Yeah. Lloyd Grant, Managing Director for the Milwaukee County Transit System. And with me I have Michael Juno, our new Deputy Director. I wanted to introduce him to this committee. He is... been a member of the transit system organization for over 30 years. Started with our organization as a bus operator. And so has certainly worked his way up through the ranks. Mr. Juno is currently responsible for our operations. That includes our bus operations involving at least 700 bus drivers, our maintenance and facilities maintenance operation, as well as scheduling and planning. So. He's a very busy guy, and I intend to keep him even busier.
Well, very good. And I think all our offices have probably used the services of Mr. Juno, and congratulations and welcome to you, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Grant.
Okay. In reviewing the governor's 2011-2013 biennial budget plan, we did determine that that plan would impact the transit system in at least two very significant ways. The first being that the plan decreases state operating aid for transit by 10% in 2012 and provides for no increase in 2013. The second significant change is that the plan transfers state funding from mass transit to the segregated transportation fund to the general fund. The significance of the 10% reduction in state aid equates to a funding cut of about $7 million for our transit system. And what that means is that we could be looking as much as an 8% cut in transit service.
which could, in fact, translate to the loss of over 4 million rides annually. So the problem with what is being proposed in the governor's plan is further compounded by the fact that when service is cut, we lose ridership, and therefore we lose revenue, and we'll have to look at even cutting more service to make up that lost revenue. So there's a compounded problem here. If the proposed cut in state aid is in fact passed, we will certainly need to consider a combination of expense reductions, such as service cuts, and any revenue generating options that we can come up with to fill the gap. I'd like to share with the committee that on Monday of this week, I did testify before the Joint Committee on Finance, urging them to oppose the 10% cut in state operating aid for mass transit. I advised the committee that in light of the fact that we are seeing fuel prices approaching $4 a gallon, the need for mass transit, not only in Milwaukee County, but across the state, is greater than ever. I also urged the committee that rather than disinvest in transit, that state operating aid for transit should actually be increased at a minimum of 5% across all tiers in calendar years 2012 and 2013. As for the proposed change in funding source for transit, I believe the change will be disastrous for transit in Milwaukee County and across the state. During my testimony to the Joint Finance Committee, I stated to the committee that it's difficult to understand how transit can reasonably be moved from a fund, be moved into a fund that has itself essentially relied on funding from the transportation fund itself over the last 5 years. And so I certainly urge the committee to oppose that proposal as well. In terms of what we are doing, the options are certainly limited, to say the least. I would concur that the proposal certainly puts our governing body in a very difficult situation of having to make difficult choices that will, in fact, impact the quality of life, not only for our citizens, but for visitors as well. Some of the potential changes that we'll have to consider to reduce expenses if this provision were to go through is in fact eliminating entire bus routes and maybe some school routes. We'll have to consider elimination of services to special events such as State Fair and Summerfest. We may have to look at reduction in our hours of service and reduction in the paratransit service area, which was spoken to earlier. And certainly we'll look at reductions in labor and fringe benefits costs, including cost sharing. On the revenue side of the equation, we're limited with respect to alternatives, so we'll certainly have to consider fare increases. We are currently have one of the highest fares in the nation as I speak, so to consider even a greater fare would probably put us at one of the highest fares in the nation altogether. One option that was considered about a year ago by the board was a wheel tax. We may have to revisit that subject as to whether or not that is a mechanism that can be used to generate revenue for the transit system. And while I'm hopeful, but perhaps not overly optimistic, you know, perhaps there will be an increase in state funding as we requested. We won't know until that budget is decided, and we don't know at this point what will be the outcome of the federal budget. So with that, if the committee has any questions.
Well, I would say, and I'll throw it to the supervisors, but we did, the supervisor Dietrich certainly led the charge on the transit points you brought up. I specifically, when I saw the budget, I mean, we were prepared that they would take it out of the segregated fund, and a few of us have not supported the sales tax increase. Mm-hmm. But it was understanding that, well, monies would stay in transportation. We've always argued, some of us, that if we would just get our fair share of what we put in and get them through transportation fund, we wouldn't have these problems to start with. So now the new governor has really done the same thing. And, you know, he's accused the past governor, of course, to bring the transportation, which he did. He took money out of the transportation fund, used it for other areas. But now we have a segregated transportation fund. He takes money out of that and puts it all in the general fund, when obviously he knows very well that now it's in competition with mental health, well, everything else under the sun we've talked about. And so in four or five major categories, it's in direct confrontation in the same bunch. So obviously transportation has suffered there. I think that is more, that's much more terrible than a general 10% cut, because this could be, I don't know how you're going to be able to calculate that, because you don't know what the effect will be. The limited monies you have, the transportation has to fight for those, and so you're more than likely to be a loser in that area, unfortunately. But that was my main point of contention when I spoke, too, and I feel strongly about that. But there are others, as you mentioned. The per-transit one is also one that's a... I mean, we have gone out of our way. Milwaukee County should be complimented. And, you know, we don't have to do it, and I guess that's where the, you know, the governor draws the line. We don't have to do it. But then we look at, you know, we provided, I know, 44 million rides last year. We provided 4 million paratransit rides, and those would be significantly have to be cut if, you know, the budget goes through. And then where do these people go? I mean, they go to doctor's appointments. These are people with disabilities. These are seniors. These are 80, 90-year-old people. That's the only way they can get around. And, you know, now they draw a line with bus routes. And then I don't know how that's going to work. That's something really to make sure is known, and they can take responsibility of that. Supervisor Dmitriyevich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you. Yeah, we did, a couple of us did...
Supervisor Jurisic, I wanted to mention.
Right, yes. We did ride the bus. Well, I led the charge. You got the FaceTime on TV, but that's, you know what, that was...
well, you got the pretty face.
That was what it was all about, was to bring attention to this. And, sorry, I feel like that's a lot of feedback there. But why I want to bring that up is I wanted to bring up another point that you had talked about, Mr. Grant, and it was part of my testimony, too. Sewer PAC, so a separate entity than us here, also said and kind of expanded upon your comments that it could either be an 8% route decrease or even as far as a 30% fare increase. I just want us, maybe I'm feeling a little, you know, myopic today. I've had in Health and Human Needs, we had a lot of the same information. So this is hours and hours and hours of all this very, very devastating, depressing information. But I just want everyone who's listening, and there's a lot of people listening, people are listening at home too, that to just think about what is our community going to look like? I mean, that's what we really have to step back through all this. And again, it can be daunting. I'm having that feeling today after many hours of this. What is our community going to look like when there is not a decent transit system, when people can't get paratransit services, when mental health services are cut? I mean, it's just really, really scary. And that was why we drew special attention to the Save Our Ride rally, because it's the point I made in my testimony is it's actually a quadruple, and I want to just expand on this really quick, quadruple hit to our transit system. No dedicated funding source, we've talked about it, whether it's sales tax or anything, even though the people voted on that already. On top of that, if I hear that we're given tools, I might just faint from you know, passing out from disgust and whatever else, because we're not given tools as local policymakers. Tools, you're tying my hands, 0.06% when I'm faced with a 10% transit cut, not to mention everything else. Those aren't tools, so that's hit number two. Number three is the 10% cut, and then number four is moving us into a totally different fund, because our own governor of the state actually mentioned publicly that he thought this was a social service. Transportation is a social service. So I'm going to end my comments there, because that's what I'm talking about. What kind of community is this, and what is it going to look like when the leader of this state thinks that transportation is a social service rather than an actual public service, which is what it is. And, you know, here in Milwaukee County, I just want people to know I don't have the answers right now, but we're going to find the way. We are going to make sure that we can deliver quality life services here. I don't know how. We're not given very many opportunities, but we've got to make sure that these services are delivered. And that was something, the message that we brought to the state when we were there on Monday. So I just wanted to say that. I wanted to give Supervisor Brodrick a little break there. Thank you.
I'm not recognizing Supervisor Brodrick.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Supervisor Dmitriyevich. Supervisor Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Marina. I think it's important to point out that the half-cent sales tax that you referred to, Mr. Chairman, was passed by referendum by the majority of the people within the county of Milwaukee and was endorsed by the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce. It seems clear now that Mr. Sheehy, based on his statement, finds the governor's budget to be a perfectly acceptable proposal and that it's an acceptable proposal despite the impacts on transit and transit's ability to deliver both customers and employees to the membership of the MMAC's members. I'll leave that reversal to Mr. Sheehy to explain, if indeed he is asked a question by the members of our fourth estate. And I would hope he would be, because these inconsistencies continue to be obvious to anyone who's looking at it and continue to go curiously unreported, or at least the individuals involved are not being challenged to defend their positions as the members of this board are. I would also suggest that perhaps the editorial board be cut at least in half. I think it's clear to me that the reduction in those numbers wouldn't affect their credibility, nor would it affect their performance in the least. Sorry, Steve. I have to say these things, given the editorial positions that have been taken. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Supervisor Burkowski.
Wow. As I was sitting up here, I kind of said to myself, so this must be what it's like to be in front of a firing squad. You know, we saw this bloodbath coming, okay? I mean, and it's been painful all along. And, you know, we read the materials and hear all of the testimony today, and it just, it's brutal. It's brutal. And I guess, Mr. Chairman and committee members and the audience, I'm going to say a few things that obviously are well known, but then I want to say something that maybe might propose something that's a little bit radical. I think we all recognize what we're working under, okay? Now, we can bark all we want about how bad this is, okay? Now, what's reality? Reality is that there's a Republican governor. There's a Republican Senate. There's a Republican Assembly. In essence, there is really no line of defense, if you will. Okay? I mean, and I'm not saying anything that we don't know. And so, but it's important that we talk about this reality. I think let's also talk reality about what's going on nationally. Okay? What's happening in Wisconsin is a microcosm of what's going on in the country, and that is that you've got freshmen congressmen, mainly from the Tea Party movement, okay, and again, this is nothing that's out of school, the cuts are not severe enough. They're not severe enough, okay? And so that's the playing field that we're all on. Here's, and I've been thinking about this, and Supervisor Dimitri even said, I don't know how we're going to do it, and it just kind of made me think that what I'm going to say here might be a way, and that is we change our strategy. We change our strategy. And you might say, well, what are you talking about? Well,
what are you talking about?
We can't, first of all, the reality is we're not going to get everything. We'll be darn lucky if we get something. Come on, let's face it. I've been on this board almost 19 years, and you know, our poor lobbyists go up there, and every now and then, the state throws us a bone, and we win. But generally, we get our tails handed to us. My proposal would be that, and I'll throw something out that I've been thinking about, but it might be, Mr. Chairman, this committee might be the focal point, and we have the chairman of the county board on this committee. We decide as a committee and ultimately as a county board as to what our highest priority is. What is our highest priority? And I will just say that
I'll just throw out something that I've been thinking about. And that is what our lobbyists focus on. That is what we all call our legislators and focus on. I'm not here to say that the scattergun approach that we've been using is effective, but let's not kid ourselves. We're not going to get everything. We'll be lucky to get something. So why not go after something that we really want that could really help us, okay? Regardless of what's going to happen this summer as far as other elections and that kind of thing, you're talking about a biennium budget. You're talking 2 years. Damage is going to be done. My suggestion, not that it's the one to take or whatever, but I've been dismayed about the amounts of money that our governor, and we all know this, I mean, he had a front row seat for 8 years, so he knows what's going on in Milwaukee County, is putting so much more into road building. And I'm not here to debate whether a road up in Shawano is more important than whatever, but my point is, can't you throw us a bone? Can't you just say, you know what, in lieu of a couple of road projects, we're going to make transit whole. We're going to get you that $7 million. Because you know what, we can't afford another fee increase, okay? I mean, it's just, that's a non-starter. I mean, I know that those are tools, if you will, but that's a non-starter. Making the case to the legislators, and it's, you know what, our Milwaukee legislators, they understand the plight. They're not the ones that Roy and Kelly and everybody else have to deal with. We gotta plead our case to the people up north and the people, you know, west, and just say, you know what, we're not asking for the whole enchilada, but we really need transit, and we are asking you to at least throw us this one bone. And I throw transit out, but I think that, Mr. Chairman, this committee could decide, with everybody's help, what the priority is. Obviously, you know, people are going to say, well, that doesn't help me, that doesn't help me. I guess my feeling is that, in all reality, what I've seen happen in the past history, knowing what we're up against as far as votes, we're not going to get diddly squat. And so if we focus, maybe we have a better chance.
Well, we have done some of this. There were five of us who went up in the ambassador program, the Chairman of Government Relations, of course, they went up. And we did talk about some priorities, juvenile justice. We did get the $7 million that we were the only county that was paying left from the GAMP program. That we put that $7 million in. We talked to, I was at Alberta Darling's office with these other members, and she understood that was in the budget, so we didn't have to pay that $7 million. So I think we all appreciate your comments. We understand the difficulties and the realities of what's going on. And that's part of our staff, and we have a legislative update that we'll be getting then. And I think we have to make it. Some of the arguments are fiscal. We are dealing with fiscal conservatives. Look at the Assembly, 6238 right now. That's a 25 or 30 change. Most of the new Assembly people, you could characterize as Tea Party people, first termers. That's a characteristic, I think, of the Assembly.
Sure.
With the heavy majority, again, 6238 Republicans. So, but they are looking at fiscal figures, and I think it's our responsibility then to make sure we give them the fiscal figures when they can, and when it can be shown that there can be cost savings, and maybe we do have to prioritize one or two, and we have done that, and that's our staff, and I'd be happy to work with you two, Supervisor, and the committee to try to, with their help, look at, maybe I'll get a comment then from Roy or Kelly on this, and that's really number two on our agenda, update on legislative priorities and matters and what we've been trying to do. Any other comments from Mr. Grant, Mr. Juneau? Thank you for your attendance.
Just one comment, okay. Mr. Chairman. I would say thank you and the committee for your leadership in bringing forth this important issue. I would agree with what has already been echoed here, that we are talking about changes and decisions that will have a significant impact on our community, from our seniors and disabled citizens who rely on transit for independence and choice. And frankly, we're also talking about jobs. When we devastate our transit system, We will be in a position where individuals will not be able to get to jobs that are seeking jobs. They will not be able to get to job interviews. But other individuals who rely on transit for jobs may lose those jobs because they have no other form of transportation.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Supervisor Broderick, something?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That was why I suggested that perhaps Mr. Sheehy's comments ought to be sought. When 52% of the people can vote to be taxed and be ignored by a Democratic legislature, it's no surprise that road builders are valued more highly than the survival of the infirm and the fiscally downtrodden in this state. It's not a surprise because it's all it has to be weighed in view of corporate contributions and sponsorship versus the voice of the people. We saw with the 52% of the people voting to be taxed that they were ignored. In favor of what? That's a story, and it's a story that needs to be told loudly. Unfortunately, it's not being told because people like Mr. Sheehy are simply not being asked to defend themselves in the face of what they've done versus what they've gained.
Okay, thank you. That was all on one. We only had two agenda items. I believe that was just one agenda item this last period of time. So we're on...